Welcome to Just JKing, the podcast where we transform your HR headaches into high fives. Whether you're a founder, CEO, or just someone with HR questions you're too afraid to ask, we've got the insights, laughs, and light bulb moments that you crave.
Enjoying the show? Hit that five-star review and subscribe now so you never miss out.
Welcome back to Just JKing with Jennifer and Kim.
With over 30 years of experience in staffing, corporate leadership, and SaaS executive leadership, we are excited to welcome Susan Van Klink to the pod.
Prior to her executive coaching career, Sue was the chief revenue officer of several high-growth HR, well-being, and health tech companies, including Checkster, Grokker, and League. Sue has also held multiple global executive roles within the software unicorns Taleo and SuccessFactors.
Welcome, Sue.
Hello, Jennifer and Kim. It's so wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
So why don't we kick it off by doing some introductions? Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you became a coach to first-time founders and CEOs?
So it's been a journey, Kim, to get to where I am today. I started as an HR practitioner, as a staffing specialist, and ended up implementing staffing technology, recruiting technology, and learned the do's and don'ts of that, and ended up joining a very little known company at the time, RecruitSoft. And I spent 7 years with them, from less than $1 million in revenue to $150 million in revenue, from a private company to a public company. The role there took me to New York City, and I lived in Manhattan for my last 3 years with the company. So it was a real whirlwind organization to join, and a wonderful way to get to understand and know software. And I've been in HR technology ever since. And I, as you mentioned, held a variety of leadership and executive roles, running the emerging product lines for SuccessFactors SAP globally before becoming a chief revenue officer at multiple different companies. And it was really as an executive with Grokker that I finally left the corporate executive world and moved into independent practice. And the reason for that is that my dad became terminally ill and I needed to spend more time with him. And so I decided to make a change to my career in order to support him through his final 15 months of life. That really is what led me to become an executive coach. And I guess with my background, it became natural to start working with first-time and founder CEOs and helping them to put the pieces in place to create a high-growth situation for themselves and their companies. So it's been a journey, but it's been a great journey, and I've loved every minute of it.
So Sue, before we keep going about your career, and I've got some questions about you as a coach to founders, I can't smooth over the fact that you took time away from your career to be a caregiver. That's incredible. If you were to give advice to some of the small business leaders that we have listening about people going through challenging family situations and the need to be a caregiver, what advice would you give to them?
Oh, that's a great question. There are probably two or three pieces of advice that I would give. The first piece of advice, and it sounds like a no-brainer, but it's not, is the need to have compassion for what the person, your employee, is going through. And some leaders do that really well, and some leaders don't. I've heard stories from caregivers all over the world about the lack of understanding and the lack of acceptance of them in their caregiver role, to the point that some employees lost their jobs because of it. And so I think it's probably one of the most difficult things someone will ever go through in their lifetime and in their career. And understanding that and supporting that person to the best of your ability, I think, is really important. And when you do that, you grow great loyalty from not only that person, but the people around that person that see how you treat him or her. So that would be the first thing I would say, is like, try to have compassion and be supportive to the best of your ability, understanding their performance will most likely be affected. There are very few caregivers, I believe, who can continue to perform at the level they were performing at before and be a great caregiver. The second thing to remember is for most people, when push comes to shove, their loved one comes first and their job will take a back seat. And so if it's someone that you appreciate and want to keep as an employee, finding accommodation is really important. If they're an underperformer to begin with, maybe that's less relevant. But if it's a high performer and someone you want to keep, the performance will come back if you can help craft accommodations during that difficult time. And I guess the last thing, having been through it myself, it was probably one of the most profound and meaningful times in my career to be able to be there for my dad like that. And so I wouldn't want to take that gift away from anyone else. And to force people to choose their job over caring for the loved one is a, you know, I just fundamentally think it's the wrong thing to do. And for me personally, I couldn't have chosen my job or my career over my dad. And so I did what I did, and I have built a very meaningful and successful second or third chapter for myself as a result.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Sue. We really appreciate it. Can you then tell us a little bit about the journey? So having left the big corporate world to go off and to take care of your dad, how then did you transition to this next stage of your career? What did that look like for you? And what were some of the signs that told you it was time?
Well, interestingly, I had gone through all the steps to become an executive coach earlier in my career, about 8 years or so before I actually became one. And I was on the path to becoming an executive coach when I was approached to run a company called Success Finder based in Montreal. And that role was the perfect role for me. The company was exactly the right company for me at the time. And so I ended up staying in corporate executive world probably 8 years longer than I had planned to. So when my dad got sick and needed more care than I could give him with my full-time executive career, it made sense for me to revisit my original plan and go into executive coaching in earnest. You know, I started it by thinking about who did I want to help? Who did I want to be a resource for? And where were my natural networks? And there were three answers really that came forward. I wanted to help other people like me that were transitioning in their career, that were looking to figure out their next chapter and work with them to help them make that transition. The second thing is I've really always had a desire to help women excel and succeed and move up the ladder. And so working with women and helping them to get to their next level of leadership, whatever that might be. And then it was, you know, sort of easy for me to start working with founders and CEOs, especially female founders and CEOs who were mostly doing this for the first time and were often not well funded to start. And so helping them to navigate the challenges and all the different aspects of what it takes to run a company and grow a company. I end up working mostly with SaaS tech founders and CEOs, but it's just a natural extension of my career and the path and journey that I've been on.
So Sue, I'm so excited about this topic because I think, all three of us work with founders regularly. Although I must admit, now that you say that, most of the founders I've met and worked with were in fact men. I think I've had one female founder in my practice, which is worth noting to begin with. And I understand the funding challenges that they face actually as a group that's sort of overlooked quite often. And I think it's really exciting working with founders, but sometimes I think it's really hard to get to the point of self-awareness with them about where they need HR support, what really the big challenges they should be focusing on are. So tell us a little bit about what you find to be the biggest challenges that you need to focus on with them.
Self-awareness is a great one, Jennifer. I know it's not gender-based. Having worked in the assessment realm for quite a while, you know, it's very clearly that self-awareness is not tied to a particular gender. But that being said, I do think the women leaders, the women founders that I've worked with tend to question themselves more and question their choices, their decisions than the male founders and CEOs that I've been involved with. We've certainly heard that there is a gender difference when it comes to confidence and putting yourself forward for a role and taking the next step of how much capability someone feels they need to have before they're willing and able to do that. So I think helping someone to become self-aware is part of what a coach needs to do. And I use assessments to help me do that, to help highlight the areas of potential opportunity, strengths and weaknesses that might exist. Quite frankly, if someone is not willing to have some level of self-awareness, coaching won't work. And Right. So there is a little bit of the people that I work with, they might choose my support to help them technically be better at what they do. But if they're not willing to look themselves in the mirror and determine how they might need to shift and change as a leader, chances are we won't work together long.
I think it's like, I was going to ask you next, you know, well, what's if we want to give them a little shortcut, you know, to get some benefit from your experience here today, what can we do? But I actually think coaching is the shortcut. I think about people trying to do that without coaching, having just recognized that self-awareness is one of the largest challenges they face. I think that if you're trying to work through the journey of being a founder, scaling successfully, becoming a leader in various capacities as the organization grows, it requires different skills. It sounds almost insane to me to try to do that without some coaching. Is that too bold of a statement for you?
No, in fact, it amazes me that there aren't more C-suite coaches out there. And the reason for that is for two reasons. One is, I think the C-suite is the loneliest place in the world to be. You've been CHROs before, you've been in the executive suite. You have colleagues, but you don't really have peers. And you don't have a lot of time with your leader, the CEO, who's very busy. And if you are the CEO, there really isn't anyone that you can use as a sounding board in a truly authentic way to help check your bullshit, right? So I think every executive, every C-suite leader should have an executive coach. I almost believe that it should be a mandatory part of the role because it is such an isolating and lonely place to be. And it really is easy to get ivory tower syndrome and there be no one to call bullshit on your bullshit. And, you know, so I would have stayed an executive longer and been a more successful executive if I had had an executive coach along the way. And I never did.
100%.
So tell us a little bit how people engage with you. And so often I'm assuming that it's the executive themselves who would reach out to you, but I'm sure there's also instances where the board might reach out if they're feeling like the executive or the founder isn't getting to that place of self-awareness. Can you tell us a little bit about some experiences you've had with alternate ways that you've been engaged with founders?
I would say the majority is someone reaching out directly to me, recognizing they want to make the investment in themselves or they want to accelerate their time to results, to what Jennifer was saying earlier. Like, you really don't have to figure it out on your own and you can't afford to make a lot of mistakes along the way. And so having an executive coach who's got a lot of experience to work with you is the fast track to success. That being said, absolutely, there are times, in fact, I'm coaching someone right now, that it was a board decision that that person get some help, and that, and it was more around the dynamics of leadership for that particular coachee. They were very successful in their own right. They had done many successful things, very smart individual, but in a tricky situation with lots of politics and lots of different constituents and needing to manage all the different aspects and orchestrate things better than they were orchestrating. So it can be both ways, you know, sort of the VC, the private equity, or the board asking you in, but obviously always with the executive's acceptance, because you can't make, there's such an intimate relationship that exists in an executive coaching engagement that you need the other person to be bought in and to be involved. And if they're not, then it likely will not work. And so choosing the right executive coach is really important.
So I want to jump on that, because there are a lot of executive coaches with a variety of different backgrounds. How should an executive coach be selected, and how would someone know that they are in the right ballpark?
Well, the very first thing would be, what are you looking to get out of the coaching engagement? There are so many executive coaches in the world, and there are different flavors of an executive coach. I am a true executive coach in that I'm going to work with you to look at what type of business results you're trying to achieve and what are the steps that we need to take to help you achieve those particular business results and become a better, you know, sort of more effective leader. There are other people that are more life coaches or career coaches. Like, there are many different flavors of executive coaching. And so the first is to make sure you're working with the kind that you're looking for. So if you are looking to bring more work-life balance into your career, you might work more with a life coach than with an executive coach. If you're looking to accelerate your time to results, then you're probably looking for an executive coach and someone who has worked with C-suite individuals in the past, because people coach at all different levels of the organization as well. So it really is, asking for referrals. Most of the people that come to me through someone. They know who has recommended me as an executive coach and strategic advisor. So working the network, I know certain VCs and private equity companies provide those types of capabilities and support as a package of what they do when they offer investment support. So it really does. I think for most people, you network your way into the right executive coach. Googling and LinkedIn work too. But I think ultimately you want to interview the person and make sure. I never take somebody on as a client until we've had a meeting and we've talked about what their goals are and I know I can help. And if I can't help them because their goals are outside of what I can do or what I know or how I like to coach, then I refer them to other people that are more in line with what they're trying to do.
So you came into this latest version of your career with a tremendous amount of experience behind you with, working in startups, and now you're supporting people as founders and the CEOs of startups scaling. What has surprised you from your new perspective, coming at it from this angle? What have you learned, or what has been surprising to you in working with this group in a different capacity?
Probably the thing that surprises me the most, and it surprised me in my executive career as well, is how unwilling people can be to listen and to hear things they don't want to hear. And so you would think when somebody hires an executive coach or a strategic advisor, that they are all ears, they want to hear what you have to say, and they buy in, you know, sort of instantly to your wisdom. It doesn't work like that. Then there are two things. One is you have to establish rapport and trust and have the person understand the expertise that you offer. So there is some of that, but the other is that openness and that willingness to ask for advice and then really listen to the advice that's given. I think a lot of times we as people, and especially as executives, are almost trained to ask questions we already know the answer to and have predetermined ideas about how we should do it and not be opening to hearing an alternative point of view. And to have a really good coaching-coachee relationship, you have to be okay to like break that and let people know when they're not listening. Or, but it's shocking to me that, you know, people pay really good money to ask questions and then not listen to the answers.
Yeah, I think that's so
experience that yourselves.
I think that that's so interesting. And it's like, well, that's the whole point of the exercise. But, and you know, there's a time to be vulnerable as a founder and a time, certainly a time not to be. And it's kind of hard maybe to switch between the two. And I can totally understand that challenge. But I think one thing that sort of gets overlooked in a training and development perspective that I think would be really valuable for every organization is teaching people how to receive feedback, yeah. Like just simple. You know, I attended a session about that a couple of weeks ago and I was like, wow, that is what I would call a very narrow topic, really, but also so critical, because if you can't get past that, then nothing else gets in from that point forward. So I think just as anyone listening who's running a business, I think just creating a culture where people understand how to receive feedback to me sounds like something that would be tremendously valuable and create a lot of additional productivity.
The number one thing someone can do if they want to create a culture of feedback is teach everyone to ask for feedback. There is research that shows if you offer someone feedback that they haven't asked for, they will not hear it.
Right. That makes sense too.
It's really important that you teach people to ask for feedback so that they will be open to receiving the feedback when they get it. And that's the first step I'd take if I was going to create a culture of feedback and continuous improvement.
I'd also say to any executive who's looking for executive coaching, when they're looking for an executive coach, ask themselves, is this someone who I will receive feedback from? So I think one of the biggest challenges also in a coaching relationship is if somebody is rolling their eyes in the back of their head thinking, oh, what does this woman know about my business? Then that's not the right coach. You need to have that trusting relationship and know that you're going into, you know, an exchange of ideas with someone who you have that level of respect for sure.
100%. I think, you know, sort of trust, respect, connection, those are, you cannot have a good coaching engagement without those things. So when you're interviewing executive coaches, looking for that thought partner, looking for someone that you can be vulnerable with, that you can accept feedback from, you really want to make sure that you're signing up with the right person who has the right background, but also the right approach. And I've coached men and women. I like coaching both, quite frankly. And I find that invariably, the people that I work with who I coach get incredible value from another perspective that's outside and unrelated to their business. One of the problems that happens when you have even your board, even your investors, your C-suite, whatever it might be, there's a little bit of groupthink that happens when you're building something together, when you're running a company together. Getting someone who is knowledgeable enough, but not intimately connected with your business, gives you another perspective, another point of view, and can challenge you to potentially see things different in a way that none of those other constituents or stakeholders could or would.
So Sue, tell us a little bit about what stage of growth are the founders that you're usually working with, or when is the right time to engage with an executive coach like yourself?
Well, definitely whenever someone is trying to grow to the next level, there is a value to having a thought partner that can help you, you know, sort of succeed and achieve that next level. I tend to work with all types of founders that are sort of pre-Series C. And so what does that mean? Well, They could be bootstrapped and not have taken any investment. They could be looking to take their first round of investment. They could have received investment and their Series A or B, looking to get to the next level. Usually by the time you get to Series C, you have a network established. You have, you know, sort of a lot of different resources at your disposal. I believe that every executive could use a coach at every stage of growth, because I think having that external, knowledgeable third party to help is really an accelerant on your own development and the development of your company. But I find that the people that really need it the most are the ones that haven't secured a lot of funding yet and don't have access to all the resources that come with that.
And while we're on the topic, how important do you think that external funding is to the founder journey and being able to achieve your goals as a founder?
That is so personal to every situation. There's an analysis that I personally do when I'm doing strategic advisory work with a company around the organic growth of the company, the inbound of new business sales, how well they can grow without external funding, and what their growth ambitions are. Quite frankly, especially if you're a software as a service technology company, it is almost impossible to grow at a high growth speed without external funding, because revenue and EBITDA is all back end loaded. And so you really have to invest ahead of the curve in sales and go to market, in product developments, and to the degree that if you're waiting for what you can generate on your own to feed back into the business, you are naturally going to dull your growth, stunt your growth. And so it really does depend on how strong incoming sales to an organization is and how fast the company and the founder wants to grow. And those two things determine whether you need to take outside money or not. And we all know that outside money comes with its own share of challenges and risks and difficulties. So, you know, it's not something to be entered into lightly. And the most important thing is, if you do take outside money, is to manage it well, not let it go to your head and not let the pressure of those investors set you on a course that causes you to keep having to take outside money, because eventually you won't own your business.
And that's so common, isn't it? And I think, you know, score another one for having an executive coach as you work through all the fears and common pitfalls of going through that process. It seems even more important to me now that you've explained all of that, to have someone in your corner who can help you navigate sort of the emotional and stress challenges of going through that for the first time.
It is fraught, really. I think of good friends of mine who were building a very successful bootstrap business and then took funding. And before you knew it, they were Series E and tapped out. And, you know, the pressure to set performance targets and drive revenues that were unsustainable for the business. There's all sorts of potential challenges that can come with taking money. So, you know, understanding when to take money and how to push back and how to manage the pressure once you've taken that money, I think those are important reasons to invite an external third-party person into the relationship that can help keep you strong as you encounter some of those pressures.
Yeah. And the emotions, right? So, you know, the company is your baby and your employees who have been there with you since the beginning are your quote unquote family. And at a certain point of growth, that just becomes much more difficult to sustain. And I think that many founders fall into that category of sometimes making those emotional decisions versus making the business decisions that they need to when they get to a certain point of growth, which is where I could really see that third party voice being super helpful.
It's interesting. I heard high EQ is negatively correlated with being a good CEO, in part for that reason, right? Which is, there can become a point when you're too compassionate, when you're too caring and considerate and you are not making hard calls as a leader that you need to make to ensure that your company makes it to the next level. And we all have to decide what kind of company we want to run and how we want the company to act and, you know, whether we want to prioritize growth versus compassion. Those are all things that we have to choose as leaders and founder CEOs, what it is we want to stand for as a company. But to understand the trade-offs, understand how certain choices are going to lead to potentially unintended consequences, I think is really important. And not to let, you know, sort of not to let yourself sit in your comfort zone and only do the things that are comfortable to you to the detriment of your company. Because ultimately, if a company isn't growing the way that it should be, then it's not thriving and the employees therefore are not thriving, in my opinion.
For sure. All right, Sue. So we've got some questions that we ask all of our guests. Are you ready? I'm going to start on the easiest or the easiest of the questions for you to answer would be, what's the one thing that you believe small businesses can do today to change the game for their people?
Ooh, I could answer that in so many different ways, but I would have to say that really investing in C-suite development, making sure that each executive is the best leader that they can possibly be, and creating synergies in team offsites and executive bonding and things like that. I just see far too many dysfunctional C-suites. And to the extent that you can create the highest functioning executive team in the business is the absolute best thing that you could do for your company and your employees.
Great advice. So next we have some rapid fire questions. Jennifer, do you want to take the rapid fire questions this time?
All right. So I'd be happy to go through the rapid fire questions today. So Sue, first thing, what was your first job?
Oh, my first job. I was a counselor at a horseback riding camp.
Oh, I love that. I ride horses too. How did you find it?
I had a horse myself, and the barn we were at was having a summer camp for a young kid. And me and a group of my friends became the counselors at that camp. Super fun job. And I've been a camp counselor a few times in my career and have loved it every time.
Amazing. Okay. And your best job to date?
I think the experience I had running a company, being the CEO for all intents and purposes, was the best job for me. I think it appeals to every part of my being to be at the top and be the leader. So I would have to say that, although this one runs a close second.
All right. I love it. Well, we know as a coach, you embrace humility. So what was your biggest mess up?
My biggest mess up was probably not speaking truth to power at a time when I absolutely should have been speaking truth to power.
All right. I love that. That's all for everybody. That's an important one. Okay. The best learning you've had?
You know, those early days of software or learning on the job, that first, you know, 4 or 5 years at Taleo, I had 4 or 5 different roles in about the same amount of time. I was an implementation consultant, then I ran services for Canada, then I took over the pre-sales group, then I moved to New York and I ran the Eastern US sales organization. And then in my last role, I took on the North American customer base. The learning of that, the energy of that, the pace of that, everything that I learned in those first 4 or 5 years of software created a foundation that grew my career in a way I never could have anticipated nor tried, but it was fabulous and phenomenal and loved everything about it.
Cool. Okay. Your quickest quit.
My quickest quit was probably my first CRO role. And I lasted there a year and I went to the CEO and I said, you overhired for the job. I am not the person that you need. You really need a VP of sales, and I'm going to save you a lot of money, and I'm going to go and find a real CRO role, chief revenue officer role, and you're going to find yourself a VP of sales because that's what you really need. And so love the company, love the founder and CEO. We had worked together in the past, but he wanted me. I told him I didn't think I was the right fit for the job. I thought he needed something a little less senior, and gave it a try. And at the end of a year said, look, let's agree that you need something different and I need something different. So we went our separate ways.
Isn't that so funny how sometimes our first instincts when it comes to taking assignments like that usually end up to be right? I don't know if that's a good thing to say in front of an executive coach or not, because maybe it's not that simple.
I think it's always that simple, Jennifer. Honestly, I can think about warning signs of every job that I've said yes to and looked back and said, they came true and I should have listened to them.
Yeah, that's the ultimate superpower though. Who really has that mastered? I would love, it would be the ultimate superpower to know when to listen to that. All right. That was awesome. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much, Sue, for joining us today. Where can people reach out to you if they're on the market for executive coaching?
You can always find me on my website, susanvanklink.com, or sue@susanvanklink.com is my email address. So LinkedIn, I have a pretty unusual last name, so it's usually easy to find me on any of the social media sources as well.
Thanks so much, Sue.
Well, thanks to both of you for having me on your podcast. It's been a delight, and I look forward to sharing it with everyone when it's released.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of Just JKing. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and took away some valuable insights to shake up your own HR game.
If you loved this episode, and we hope you did, make sure to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share it with your network. We want to hear your thoughts, your feedback, and even your own wild HR stories.
And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn or drop us a message. Let us know what topics you want us to dive into next.
Until next time, keep it real, keep it human, and always keep JKing.
We'll see you next time on Just JKing. Thanks for listening.